Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, February 26th. We're going to do our work sessions first and get those out of the way, and then we'll go to our informational meeting. So open up a work session on Senate Bill 124. Jim, just remind us of the amendment before us on the bill, and then we'll...
Yes, Senator Metzger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 124 is the motorcycle changes the class of offense of operating motorcycle without driver's license motorcycle endorsement from Class B to Class A. You wanted an option for people who are cited to get the endorsement, to take the education class. That's what the Dash 3 amendment does.
Okay, so that now, colleagues, means that if they take the endorsement training within 120 days, then they could do that rather than be fined. And I think that was the general consensus of the committee, if I'm correct. So.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 124.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 124. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 124 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 124 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I mean, the goal here is to get people to do the training, and that's, you know, clearly the training saves lives and provides for a safer driving environment. So, and that's what this bill does. So.
Good. Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. Senator Starr, would you want to carry that?
Sure.
I thought the speech was great, so we'll just go with that. Open up work session on Senate Bill 129. Jim, you want to talk to us again?
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 129 is the, but you've had this several times. This is back for its fourth time. This is the bill that increases the penalty for violation of Oregon Department of Transportation out of service order, so it has to do with the regulating of trucking. You may remember that it came out of the federal audit of ODOT statutes. You have the Dash 4 amendment, which moves and consolidates civil penalty language. This is from ODOT, but has consensus, as my understanding. And then you have the Dash 5 amendment, which removes the requirement that the farm endorsement be canceled based on disqualification from commercial driver license for violations, including railroad crossing, driving while intoxicated, refusal to submit to alcohol test. That's the Dash 5. So you actually have two amendments under active consideration.
Okay.
We're good for both, right?
I think we're good for both.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 129.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 129. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 129.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 129. Discussion? Just one comment is that so we are still leaving the possibility that that a farm endorsement in some categories will be able to go forward. I realize this is not as strong as what it was with the department, but I will also mention it is stronger than the current law. So I think that's a fair compromise. It's a kind of the two, we'll call it the two-time loser law. Any objections to the Dash 5?
Nope.
Okay. Then you move the bill. Any objections to the bill?
I haven't moved the bill yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you need to gavel down on the fives? Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr's moved Senate Bill 129 as amended by the Dash 4s and Dash 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Mm-hmm. Any objection? Anybody in particular would like to carry this bill? Okay. I guess I will.
Okay.
Okay, open up a work session on Senate Bill 198. Jim.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 198 is the Oregon Racing Commission bill to suspend prior to hearing license of multi-jurisdictional multicast wagering hubs. You have the Dash 1 amendment, which you requested with more specific language on how the hearing would be handled after the suspension of the license.
Okay, and there was a discussion, as you recall, colleagues, that I think Senator George brought up, wanted to have some kind of idea of how long that would be, suggested see if we could do that in a short period of time, like 15 days, and that's what they decided they could do it that way. So this puts some specificity in the language that it would be 15 days. Any objection to the
motion?
That motion first.
I'll move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 198. I'm sorry.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 198. Any discussion? Any objections? Ordered. We are in a work session, but I'm going to ask Mr. Nyquist to come forward. on this. There may be something he would like to have considered, which would be in the House of Representatives, not today, but I do want on the record to have him discuss what the issue is. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senators, for the record, Roger Nyquist. I'm here on behalf of TVG, which is, in fact, a multi-jurisdictional hub licensed to do business in the state of Oregon. Been here about 10 years. And we support the spirit and the intent of this bill. We have some procedural questions and concern going forward and how future commissions might interpret this bill. Our biggest heartburn is with Section 2B, specifically Line 11, which reads, involves an intentional violation by the licensee of a federal or Oregon law or commission rule. And the way we interpret this bill is that would be any commission rule. And I would submit to you that there are some rule violations that don't warrant an immediate suspension without a hearing. The second issue we have is under the summary, it authorizes the Oregon Racing Commission without prior hearing, which is fairly aggressive, and there would be times we understand that may be warranted. But one question that comes up is, would they adopt findings before they suspend, and wouldn't that be done during some hearing process? And then in the last line of the summary, it refers to certain violations, and we would ask, should it not specify what those violations are? So it's not quite so broad.
Mr. Zimmer?
And you know that the summary is not a part of the law that's adopted. The summary is a summary that's generated by legislative council. We also, as committee staff, we also do a summary, but it's not part of the law that gets passed.
Okay.
So it's the wording that's in the, after the title, which says relating to, that's what is the law.
Okay, and specifically it would be line 11 that causes us the most concern.
Sure. Well, what I'd like to do, Mr. Nyquist, and I appreciate that, if everything's kind of weighed differently, I mean, I would interpret a lot different than you, but I'm not opposed and would be happy to work with you with the House Chair on having you have a chance when they have public hearings on this bill, which we've already done, to discuss that. I would just say that in all licensing groups, whether it's landscapers or surveyors, you know, they can all suspend, you know, licensees under different things. And I know people get, you know, could all have a concern that the commission may be irrational, do things, because I think all of us in our offices here where we think someone was heavy-handed or whatever. And part of the thing is that, I mean, I guess we can make that case with any group, but with the appointees by the governor and validated by us, you know, there's always that that sense of trust. That's one reason we have these people on, that while technically they might be able to do that, we don't expect those people serving in good to just say, just because this is a violation, we're going to, you know, suspend all of our licensees or whatever. But I'm happy to have you have that discussion on the House side. I don't think it rises to, because I don't think it's that critical an issue, and I would disagree with it, but I think the forum is fine. As this bill moves over to the House, you want to have that discussion there. I will talk to the chair about this and ask it during their hearing process. And that way it gives you also a time to maybe work on that a little bit and see if you can make a case that should be modified at all.
And I apologize for coming to this forum late and not being here for the public.
That's okay. But again, I think at this stage, it doesn't rise to the level of holding this in any longer here. It'll be sitting over there for a month or so before they even get to it. So, and I'd be happy, Roger, to work with you on at least that discussion and see what the committee thinks over there. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So we have the dash one done, correct?
Chair?
Yes, Senator Stark.
Did we get a vote on the dash one?
Have we adopted the dash ones?
Okay, yes, we have.
Yeah, we did. A couple people were out, but we did.
Okay, so we're ready to move the bill?
Yes.
I'd move Senate Bill 198 as amended by the dash ones to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 198 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Senator George? Any others? Okay. It is passed to the floor.
Mr. Chair, at some time, I'd like to be able to vote on Senate Bill 124.
Okay. I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing Senator Verger to vote on Senate Bill 124. Is there any objection? Not Senator Verger. We have the bill before us. How will you vote?
Aye.
Senator Verger, please record as an aye vote on Senate Bill 124. Okay. Senator Starr, would you carry the racing bill?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to have a possible introduction of committee measures.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have copies of these for members if they would like. We have LC 1642 relating to public accountancy, and we have LC, these are legislative drafts, LC 2688 relating to professional log haulers.
Okay. And again, committee members, this support for introduction does not support or reject the bill, but approves it for having a discussion someplace in this legislature.
Mr. Chair, I move that we introduce LC 1642 and LC 2688 as committee bills.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved LC 1642 and LC 2688 be moved as committee bills. Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I didn't realize I'm very apologetic
sure.
for being late, but I do need to vote on Senate Bill 129 as well.
Okay. I move the rules be suspended to allow Senator Verger to vote on Senate Bill 129. Is there any objection? Okay. Senator Verger, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator Verger, report aye on Senate Bill 129. Thank you. Okay. Now we're going to open up an informational hearing. On Real ID, we're not doing any bills on that today, but we do have a couple in our committee. The Department of Transportation has one, and the ACLU has one. And I thought what we would do, we're going to have a discussion until, well, no later than 2 o'clock with the Department and ACLU, just about their concepts. And then at some point, we may actually have the bills before us for public hearing.
Okay.
But right now, I just want to talk about what the department has in mind. And with that, I'm going to ask Tom McClellan from the Oregon Department of Transportation, DMV Division, to come through. Yes. Okay, hold on a second. Representative Richardson, we don't have any particular bills before us, but if you would like to address the group, and I'm sorry I didn't... pay attention for that very much. I apologize. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. I'm Dennis Richardson. I represent the citizens of District 8 in Southern Oregon, and I wanted to address the committee for just a moment to make a few comments on the two bills that are kind of competing bills and that will deal with Oregon's response to the Real ID issue over the next 2 years. And the one that is being proposed that I would support and would ask this committee to consider is Senate Bill 536. This bill merely says that if we're going to implement Real ID before we authorize expenditure of funds, then we need to make sure that we have federal funds provided that will pay the cost of this mandate from the federal government, which originally I believe ODOT said would cost about $63 million. The last number I saw from NCSL was between $11 and $20 billion nationwide. And regardless of the cost, it's a federal mandate, and we need to assure that if the federal government feels this is important, then they should provide the cost for it and not put it on the backs of our citizens. The second issue is the security of private documents. Part of Real ID says that we need to have verified original documents that get scanned and put electronically into the system, and then those documents are subject to being viewed across the country in DMV offices throughout the states and throughout the territories and by the federal government, and we need to assure that they can't be hacked and that the security to these original documents of Oregon citizens are not put in jeopardy. On the other side is Senate Bill 128, and I would ask that the committee consider opposing this bill, and some of it is kind of similar reasons. On page 3 and elsewhere in the bill, it states that the department may make the information that's gathered available, and it says they may make it available to the following persons in their official capacities, and then it says law enforcement officials without defining who or where, what jurisdictions those law enforcement officials might be from, and motor vehicle agencies in other jurisdictions without defining jurisdictions. The reason I bring that up was in Washington, there was discussion originally about having this be a multinational database and that Mexico and the Mexican government should have access to our records, as well as Canada and the Canadian government and their agencies, and vice versa, part of the North American Union and that whole issue. There's no restrictions in this, in the wording of Senate Bill 128 to prevent an expansion of where these documents are available, and the security of the documents of our citizens are at stake. And unless we have protection for our citizens' original documents, and unless we provide, we have the funding to do this that comes from the federal government who is mandating us to comply, then I would say that we should not support Senate Bill 128 and that we would support the other bill, Senate Bill 536, because they ought to pay before they require us to play. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any questions for Representative Richardson? I think you have a couple of sponsors of that bill on this committee, so I'm sure we'll have that discussion so when we bring the bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Mr. McClellan. Tell us what the DMV thinks we should do this session and why.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the DMV Administrator with the Department of Transportation. I believe I was invited here to share some information about the Real ID Act and to inform you about what the law and the regulations actually say and to give you a bit of a status report of where we're at and what we think is still needed
yes.
to comply.
Thank you.
So the materials being handed out to you is our best effort at distilling down hundreds of pages of regulations and requirements from the federal government into something we think is fairly easily understood as far as what is required and where we're at today. So I'd like to go through this, and you just stop me if you think I'm going too slow or if you want me to speed up, just let me know. First, background, just so you have some basic information about this. The Federal Real ID Act was signed into law in May of 2005, so almost 4 years ago. The act was intended to strengthen the driver license and ID card issuance processes in the states by setting minimum standards that states would meet. We don't have that today. States can set their own standards for issuing the standard Class C driver's license, unlike commercial drivers, where there are national standards in place. A summary of the key requirements of the Act are provided in Attachment A. So in just one page, we've listed some of the key provisions of the Act. While the Act originally required states to comply by May 11th of 2008, which is long past, the final regulations came out last January, and they provided states with additional time. They gave us extensions, the first being to December 31st of 2009, later this year. All states were granted this extension, whether they applied for it or not. Some didn't even ask for it, and they got it. So the extension was applied by the federal government. States must meet 18 benchmarks, and those are listed in Attachment B of your document. Those must be completed by January 1st of 2010, in about 10 months, to be considered material compliant and to be eligible to request a second extension to May of 2011. States must meet an additional 21 requirements by May 11th of 2011 to achieve what they've called full compliance. So those are the key dates and kind of benchmarks that we have to make to meet if the state chooses to comply. And that's the multi-million dollar question for you. Requirements that Oregon has already met. We've actually made quite a bit of progress along this path to improve our standards. Including the bill passed last February 2008 in a special session. Proof of U.S. citizenship or lawful presence, proof of a Social Security number, electronic verification of the Social Security number and immigration documents with the issuing agency, collecting an applicant's full legal name, and to issue a limited term license or ID card that expires when a person's legal stay in this country expires. That's due to be completed by January 1 of 2010, which will meet the time frames of the federal law. Oregon received federal grant funds to implement the verification of the immigration documents and the issuance of the limited term driver license and ID cards. About $1.2 million we've received so far from the federal government to help with that effort. What Oregon still needs to do, there's additional statutory changes that we need, and we have identified those in Senate Bill 128 for you so that you know what changes would be required. We also have, of course, computer systems and business processes and card design work that we need to look at and make some changes to achieve the compliance. We do have statutory authority to meet some of the remaining requirements, but additional work is needed. And that's where we have a budget package and the governor's recommended budget for some resources, contractors, positions, things like that, to move ahead on some things that within our current authority we can do that are not part of Senate Bill 128. It's separate. Those include taking a photo of all applicants, even if a card is not issued. We call it photo first. Today we take the picture at the end of the process. Once you've proven your eligibility, passed all the tests, you've paid your fees, we take a picture and you get an interim card, and eventually it'll be mailed to you in a few days. This calls for a photo when the person first comes in the door, when they become an applicant. We've looked at maybe some ways how to define applicant such that we could take the photo later in the process, but that doesn't look like it's going to meet the regulations. It's a change in procedure more than anything else for us. But there is some cost also in the process. Expanding the name field on the card and on the applicant's driving record. The regulations say you must have the room for 39 characters on the face of the card. We have 36. So we're a little short there. We'll take some changes for that. You also are supposed to keep not have enough room in your database for names that are up to 125 characters. First, middle, last, surname, multiple dashes, you know, all that, up to 125 characters. I think we're about half of that in our database today. So there's significant systems impact for that. Allowing applicants who will be 50 years of age or younger on December 1st of 2014 to begin replacing their current driver license with a Real ID compliant card. Completing a plan to document our security procedures. These are all things we can do with existing authorities that we have and existing resources. And we are, in fact, doing that to document what our security provisions are, privacy protections, things like that. Establishing a written exceptions process for persons who, for whatever reason, are not able to provide the necessary documents. We have a review process we're doing today as part of Senate Bill 1080 from last year, where exceptions are granted, but it's a review process that needs to be documented to meet the federal regulations. Noting on the applicant's record when an exception process was used, we think that's a good idea. The next time the person comes in, we know whether an exception was necessary to get the person the card originally, so we'll have some record of that. Verifying birth certificates and passports with the issuing agencies. Today there is no system that the states can access to verify a birth certificate or a U.S. government passport. Those systems have not been created. It's expected that we would be able to access those when they are.
Mr. Collins, Senator Berger has a question.
I'm really glad that you brought that out, because I've had three veterans who were born in other states. And if you don't straighten that out, that is serious with this ID,
mm-hmm.
because they've been able to fight and protect our country, but could not get a driver's license. And so, can you tell me what you're doing about a person in Oregon who was born in New York, who does not have any proof of that, and what can you do to help them get a valid certificate within a reasonable period of time? For instance, the time limit usually is 6 weeks to 8 weeks out, and so for that many weeks, they can't drive.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, we do issue a temporary applicant temporary permit. It's good for 90 days, and we can extend that for an extra 60 days. And for that very reason you're talking about, it typically takes states or counties in other states to issue that certified copy of the birth. It can take several weeks for that to arrive. So in the meantime, the person is still able to drive if they had a card. already. They had a driver's license. They were just coming in to renew. They could continue to drive. We also provide information and assistance to people who are having difficulty even figuring out where do I apply for a certified copy of a birth certificate in New York, for example. We've been providing assistance to those people. And it varies significantly. California actually is probably one of the worst as far as turnaround times, and their budget situation probably won't make it any better.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I really hope that all of your offices are treating this the same.
Yes.
I've had to bring in the department in all three cases, meaning the Department of Veteran Affairs, in order to get these people a temporary permit, mm-hmm. and that shouldn't happen either. So I'm glad that you have that on the list, and I hope that there can be something worked out better than the system that we have today.
Okay.
Okay.
The last one for this part is verifying driver license and ID cards with the issuing state. The applicability of this is to verify that a person doesn't already have a driver's license or an ID card issued in another state. That's the main reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the systems in place today to determine that. They may offer that card to us as part of the application process, and then we know they're from another state, but there's no current way to verify that they don't have another license in one or more other states today. We have applied for additional federal funds to allow a photo to be taken of the applicant for a driver's license up front, to expand the full legal name field on the card and in the database, to create a validation screen. This is really for our employees to assist in the verification process to make sure we're checking all the necessary systems and checking the boxes, basically, part of that process, and to note when the applicant's an exception has been approved for that applicant on our records. We're also writing a plan to document the security procedures of the production facility, protection of personal information. We're establishing a written exceptions process. Those are the types of things we're planning to use the federal funds for. We have applied for about $1.2 million in addition to the $1.2 we got last year. We're pretty much guaranteed at least $750,000. We've asked for a little more than what the minimum was to try to get as much as we can for the state. And those are all really related to Senate Bill 1080 from last session. Okay, so we're trying not to go beyond what authorities you've granted to us as far as moving ahead in this area. Senate Bill 128 amends statutes to give the department authority to implement a few other things. For example, the collection and retaining of images of identity source documents. I know that's a point of contention for a number of people, but that is in the law. It's not in the regulations. It's actually in the law passed by Congress that a state must collect, retain a copy, either electronically or in paper format, of any of the source documents a person provides to obtain a driver's license. So that means evidence of a Social Security number, evidence of your identity and legal presence, address. Those documents you present to prove you meet the requirements, we would need to either keep a paper copy, a Xerox copy, or an electronic copy. We'd recommend the electronic for better security, if nothing else. That is a requirement of the Act, and that's a significant part of our fiscal, and I think it's a significant part of Senate Bill 128 for you to consider. But it is one of the key provisions of the Federal Real ID Act. Okay? Requiring criminal background checks of all employees and contractors who process driver license and ID cards or have the ability to change the data that we have in our systems. That would include a contractor that produces our cards, a private company. It also proposes an increase in fees to cover the cost, not to exceed $10 per card. We believe it's probably closer to $6 from our current estimates right now, but the bill proposes a maximum of $10 increase in fees. And like I said, there is a budget package proposed in the governor's budget in Senate Bill 5548. So what happens if we don't comply? I think you probably read things in the paper about this, but there are no monetary penalties to the state. There's not a 10% of federal highway funds that would be withheld or anything like that. There's no monetary penalty applied to it. If Oregon does not meet the material compliance requirements by the end of this year, Oregonians will need another form of photo ID to pass the security check at an airport to access a federal building that currently requires photo ID, and that could be a passport or a passport card that now Homeland Security is issuing. I think that's about $40, $44, something like that, for a passport card. That would be a suitable alternative. But your Oregon-issued driver license and ID card cannot. And they could make that effective January 1st of next year if we're not material compliant. That's the big hammer, if you will, as part of this law. Next steps, let me just walk you through this. Once we achieve material compliance and we get the extra time, we then fall into a category where people must re-enroll and obtain a compliant card based on their age. So the assumption is if you're a younger person, you're more of a risk than if you're an older person. So that's where these dates come in. December 1st of 2014, federal agencies would stop accepting non-real ID compliant cards from persons born after December 1st of 1964. So if you're older than 50, you've got three more years, actually, because you have until 2017 to get a compliant card. We have an eight-year issued card, so many people will have already received a compliant card between now and then. So there'll be a certain number of people who will have to come in if they want a compliant card to do that. So the fiscal part of this piece actually pushes out a couple of biennia before you actually see the effect of this re-enrollment, that people must come back to get a compliant card. That make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. Attachment A, again, kind of, in a one-pager list what some of the main components of the Real ID Act are, so you can see what those are. Attachment B, and this is where I wanted to find out how much time you wanted to spend. I can take you through each of the requirements and give you a sense of is it completed? Are we working on it? Do we need your help through statutory change or additional resources? If that would be helpful, I will take you through that.
Well,
Chair, yes. Before that, I would really appreciate if he would address Representative Richardson's comment about no protection of the original documents as his complaint about 128.
Okay. About security of the
documents. Security of the documents, in 128.
I think the reference was to the images of identity documents. I think that's what his reference was. We would certainly put as many security provisions in place as possible for those types of documents because we realize how important that is, the privacy related to that. I would not be as concerned about our system's security and the protections as maybe the access from other states and other state law enforcement agencies. And I think that's part of what his concern was as well. We don't have as much control over the procedures and systems used by other states. To the extent we can define law enforcement official or agency, we can do that in administrative rules. We can limit that to only the types of law enforcement agencies that we think should have access to it. We do that today with our existing records. There is a Federal Driver Protection Act, DPPA is what it's called. Oregon's laws are actually more stringent than the federal DPPA requirements for access to records. So I feel pretty good, actually, about that part of it. And as you add new documents that you're protecting, that would fall under those current federal and state laws for protections.
Okay.
So I can't give you a complete assurance it would never happen, that they wouldn't be released. But you can be assured that we would put everything in place that we could to prevent unauthorized access or inappropriate release of that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. I think unless the committee wants, I don't think we need to have you run through each one of these. I think you have a very clear matrix of what is in this bill and what's been done. But if the committee wants to walk through each of those with Mr. McClellan, we don't need to. So I just I have a couple questions and then ask the committee, because, again, I haven't decided whether we will be actually bringing the bill forward on this. Because, and as we have discussed before, I think Mr. Richardson from the House side articulated some of those things. I don't speak for all the members, but I just have not seen a tremendous change from where 07 was, in which there was a lot of members that were concerned about people legally present, and we did that, mm-hmm. and citizens. But this, the rest of the Real ID, which is this security documents and privacy, as you know, was overwhelmingly, I think the Senate was unanimous against it, and I haven't sensed a tremendous amount of change, if any, on that. Having said that, there are a few things that you have in your proposed legislation, 128, that I have heard that members would like to discuss, and that's why. And then I'll open up and see what members think about some of these issues. That is protecting, for the very same reasons that they don't want to share things with other states, and the cost and the security issues, is the protections for our own citizens by our own ODOT employees to make sure that those who are dealing with our own documents have met a level anyway of security that and what you have in your sections in 15 and 16 of your Senate Bill 128 to make sure that the people who are issuing our own driver's licenses have met certain security tests. The other one that my question gets to is and I thought it kind of stuck out, and that is, as you know, with Real ID, or now even with our own law, the idea is having the driver's license is to know that that is the person for sure and that they're legally entitled to be here. And it's the law enforcement part in 13 which was interesting, which is, the document says you are who you really are, but it could be fictitious for law enforcement agencies where you make up phony records. I'd just like to have you talk about that a little bit because how extensive the use of creating those phony records are and what it takes to for the department to honor requests like that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's really for undercover police officers for the most part. We're talking about that. We will receive a request for a driver's license or an ID card under a different name, a fictitious name for that officer to protect his or her identity while they're working a case. We've actually done this for quite some time. I can't give you statistics. I don't know the numbers. It's not very common. We were just looking for something specifically in state law to authorize that as something we can point to the federal government that we have addressed. That's one of the provisions of the Real ID Act, that you'd be able to issue those with certain provisions and controls in place.
Are those limited time licenses, though? Because, I mean, if someone is like a undercover cop today, 10 years from now, they may not be. I mean, is there are these issued for time, certain things in which you see that they're collected if they're no longer pursuing the purpose for which the phony license was given out?
Mr. Chair, that would be a reasonable question. I'd have to check that. I believe that's true. They're canceled as soon as the officer no longer needs it, but I don't know that for sure.
Okay. I know that question would come up, Mr. McClellan, so that's a good one to kind of have a broader scope of what that is for, how extensive it's used, how easy it's used, mm-hmm. And the duration of those, or who checks back to see whether, you know, the renewal of that license is still appropriate or not. I know members would have that question.
Okay.
Question for Mr. McClellan about the department's desire to move forward. Go ahead, Senator Berger.
If I have a passport, how much of the information do you have about my passport?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, we view the passport today, and that's one evidence of identity and that you're in the country legally. To receive a U.S. passport, you must provide a birth certificate or something else to show you are in the country legally. We're collecting just the basic information about name, nothing more really off of that passport itself. What's proposed in the Real ID, though, is that we would make a copy, an image of your passport, and keep that in a safe place, but we keep a copy of that for our records. If there's ever any question about the validity of the document, perhaps for law enforcement purposes, if they're following up on a trail of fraudulent passports, they may contact us and say we'd like to take a look at some of those documents that were presented to you for issuing a driver's license, that would further their investigation of their case. That's really one of the reasons for keeping the copy of the document. So, but we don't do that today. That's not done today.
Follow up, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. But I can get a passport at other places besides from you.
Yes. We don't issue passports.
No. Right, and so, I mean, I can get passports from other. How do you know what information you get the records? My birth certificate, my Social Security number, my...
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, the only documents we can verify electronically that it was actually issued by the issuing agency are a Social Security card, Social Security number, and an immigration document. We can check databases of the Department of Homeland Security. But if you present a birth certificate from Oregon or any other place within the United States, or a passport issued by the U.S. government, we're relying upon the veracity of the document itself. We look for security features on the document.
Okay.
Does it appear to be official? Has it been doctored in any way? And we're looking at the document, but we have no way to electronically verify the data on it is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the rest of the documents you might present to us to see if it all fits together.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You've answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Any other questions for Mr. McClellan? Okay. Thank you for that overview.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Andrea Meyer and Kevin Starrett to come forward. Kind of has the competing concept, and if you could give us a little thoughts on that. And again, we're not dealing either of the bills today. We're trying to decide what, if anything, we might want to bring before the committee.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I'm handing out my testimony that has a lot of documents attached, and I've had computer crisis all morning long, so I already see a typo in the caption, but hopefully it is complete. I will not be reading it. I want to walk you through. You've asked to hear about some of the issues around Real ID and what our concerns. ACLU has been leading a nationwide effort in opposing Real ID, and it has been a bipartisan effort across this country, and it is about privacy. And that is the issue we're here about. That is the issues that's reflected in our legislative proposal and the concerns we have about the DMV moving forward. The reality is the government has already blinked on Real ID. And 11 states have already passed statutes saying they won't do it. And those are attached. Very quickly, background, because I think many of you know this, but Real ID was passed when it was attached to tsunami relief and Iraqi war funding. There was no hearings on it, and it was not a separate up-and-down vote. There's been cross-broad opposition, including the National Governors Association and the National Conference of State Legislators. And unfortunately, Real ID preempted the Intelligence Reform and Terrorist Prevention Act of December 2004, which implemented the 9/11 Commission recommendations about a collaborative process of developing a safer and secure driver's license, but not turning it into a national identification card. And all the stakeholders, the state agencies, DMVs, even privacy and ACLU organizations were at the table. But Real ID does turn into a default national identification. And you've heard about some of the requirements in standardizing data elements and security features, electronically scanning and storing all the identity documents, passport, birth certificate, document establishing residency, any document that you produce that contains your Social Security number, so it could be your tax returns, your W-2, requires a construction of a 50-state interlinked database accessible to thousands of DMVs across the country, and it requires the verification of issuance validity and completeness of every single document. So I've indicated that 11 states have said no, and that each of those state laws are attached to my testimony. They are Alaska, Arizona, Georgia, Idaho, Louisiana, Maine, Montana, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Washington, and this week Virginia is fast moving forward to become the 12th. There are also 10 states that have passed resolutions urging Congress to repeal, and that's Arkansas, Hawaii, Colorado, Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Tennessee. You've heard that the failure to comply is you can't get on a commercial airplane. Despite that mandate, there has been a revolt across the country. And one thing that's really clear about this is it is bipartisan. It is not a red state. It is not a blue state issue. It is, I guess we call that, a purple state issue. In March 31, 2008, Representative Governor Mark Sanford of South Carolina issued a very strong letter. It is also attached to the DHS Secretary Michael Chertoff saying, we're not doing it. Likewise, the governor of Montana, Brian Schweitzer, said they will not comply with Real ID. On NPR, he declared it was a harebrained scheme and said, sometimes it's best to tell the federal government to go to hell. So he made his position a little clear. In January of 2008, DHS finally issued the final regulations. And so it was clear no one could comply 6 months later by May. States were asked to sign a memorandum of understanding saying that they intend to comply. States refused. And Real ID, and as you also heard, states refused, some didn't request, and yet they all got an extension, and that is where the government finally blinked. The Real ID compliance continues to be significantly delayed. I mean, the original date was May 2008, and now we're into 2014 and 2017. So Congress, in addition to across the country, is underway. There's all the folks, the stakeholders involved in working to repeal or extremely modify the parts of Real ID that are significant issues. They're the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, as it should be noted, is now Janet Napolitano. She was the governor of Arizona. You'll note Arizona was one of the 11 states that said we are not going to do it. So she understands the financial burdens on states and the risks. So in light of all that, we think now is not the time to move forward with any additional steps in implementing Real ID. One of the things we know is no one knows the cost. And, you know, we've got current technology standards, administrative structures, and laws across the country, and you heard that today, are all very different, and yet they're all going to have to be the same. And there's been no study of the costs. Congress has given virtually no money to this, and the law gave no money to this. So the feds have even acknowledged that compliance carries with it significant cost and logistic burdens for which federal funds are generally not available. You've heard that DHS originally estimated costs around $23 billion, and that was in agreement with the NGA and NCSL. The final regs came out and they dropped it to $9.9 billion. And I've got a breakdown in my testimony I will not go into, but suffice it to say it became fuzzy math and a gross understatement of the true cost. So one assumption, for instance, they made was 25% of people won't get a new Real ID driver's license. They'll just use their passport instead. And yet they have no evidence to make that assumption, and it actually makes absolutely no sense because you can't drive with a passport. The numbers have been fudged, and they continue to be. And I have to say, you know, and I have greatly respect our Department of Transportation, DMV, and worked with them, but their math continues also to be fuzzy. Last fall, it was, I think Representative Richardson testified to the original amount of $63 million. Last fall, it was documented to be about $10 million. Now, it's just going to be $10 a license. But we really, the truth is, we don't know what the costs are going to be. I think Senator Metzger, you said 2 years ago, it's like remodeling your house once you start. You usually spend a lot more. You just don't know it. Not knowing the databases, not knowing how to verify, does not mean there is zero cost to those things. It simply means it's unknown. And there are these requirements for the scanning and storing and the verification, and it is a hidden tax that will be passed on to all of us. Now, briefly, identity theft. That is one of the significant risks of Real ID, because now we'll be scanning and storing all those identity documents which contain all your personal information in an interlinked 50-state database, and including all those documents, they'll be accessible and exposed to risk of breach. It is a gold mine for identity thieves. I mean, it's only exacerbated by federal funds. There's no construction of this database. It's going to be neither safe nor secure. I've testified over the years, and it continues to be true when I look at the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse that keeps track. There is a breach a day in this country, governments, private sectors. It's online, email, transmission, hacking, compromised passwords, stolen equipment, and illegitimate use by insiders. The DMV offices across this country have been targeted previously, and sometimes it's also dishonest insiders. Nearly 10 million people were subject to being victims of identity theft in 2002. That number's only increased. And Oregon DMV is not immune. Only last fall, they had what I will call a low-tech breach. Just a few months ago, there was a theft at the UPS office in Grants Pass, and in that were DMV application, driver license applications from individuals, including, in some cases, their personal identifying information, and DMV sent them all a letter letting them know that they were at risk for identity theft. Low-tech still happens, and just imagine it, creating this high-tech system needs to cost a lot of money, and imagine it all being linked into one place. That will be the database to breach. Oregon is required to construct this with no federal funds, And I think you've already heard some suggestion in the testimony previously that it will be costly to change. We don't have the characters. We don't have the fields in place yet. That's going to be unlikely new hardware and software consisting existing database, so they all mesh with the 50 states. If dedicated communication networks are required or fiber optics across the country, again, a cost. And Oregonians will insist on the highest security, the best systems, and those are going to be the most expensive ones and difficult ones to administer. Briefly, the verification of the documents that you heard about that they currently do with your social security number, and I believe if you are a lawfully present immigrant, those documents, but they've indicated, DMV, that they do not, the systems don't exist for verifying the birth certificate, the passport, or any other document that you provide, which could include from private sector to prove your residency, your utility bill. Private companies and actually governments across the other jurisdictions don't have to comply. They don't have to verify. They don't have to do it timely. And there's going to be thousands of different kinds of birth certificates, not just to review but to actually have the verification because they've changed over the decades. So outside of even Oregon DMVs and the applicant's control, people may not be getting licenses, even more a problem than under the current system. I want to note one of the aspects also is that Senator Metzger raised about the legislation is the criminal background check change, and I will be happy to testify in more detail to that if you consider that. But currently, Oregon has a pretty broad system. I've been involved in the criminal history fingerprint background check bills. There are plenty. There are many in this in a big law in the state of Oregon. DMV already has it, so I think we need to look at what are already the criminal history, the FBI fingerprint background checks, and for which employees, because what Real ID does is they mandate new ones, and they prohibit some people from ever working in jobs, no matter how long the crime was. So, for instance, there could be current DMV employees who've had a criminal history check. They know about their past. It may have been 20 or 30 years ago. The person provided that information. They had a stellar work history. DMV hired them. Under this mandate from Real ID, DMV would either have to terminate that person or move them into another job, and with a budget crisis, that job may not exist. So there's a little bit more to that wrinkle of that new additional criminal history background check. Real ID and National ID will not improve security. ID documents don't reveal evil intent. It has to be the old-fashioned kind of police work to follow the leads in the investigations. Criminals can always obtain fraudulent documents or through insiders get a real document. And one thing that if we create this sort of super ID card that people believe is the most secure and you wouldn't have been able to get it unless you could prove who you are. When you do have identity theft and when someone does get a real ID card in your name, you are going to have an extremely difficult time correcting that. Again, in terms of steps that we can take to improve our licenses that was being done in negotiated rulemaking and Real ID shut that down. Now, I want to talk about briefly in Oregon legislation, why legislation isn't necessary this session on 128. It's premature because much of it in that bill does move forward with complying with Real ID. A question that's been raised is, well, but if we pass 536, will that have any effect on the current activities of DMV? To the effect that anything the DMV is currently doing is under Senate Bill 1080, those are Oregon laws, and 536 does nothing to repeal current Oregon laws. Do we need to pass 128 because, you know, we've got to get this compliance report or we're not going to get an extension granted? Well, no. We really don't. And I don't even need to let you speculate on this. You saw it with 11 states that passed laws and said they weren't going to do it, and the administration that signed this law gave them an extension anyway. With this new administration, the pushback from across the country, headed by Janet Napolitano, who knows this issue, there is no reason to think that every state will not get an extension. And even Oregon has taken substantial or material steps already to be in compliance with Real ID. Senate Bill 640 in 2005 had a lot of components, and Senate Bill 1080 had a lot of components. And Governor Sanford talks about many of the same things we've already done that they're doing. So material compliance, we're already there. We do not need to pass new laws. And again, the penalty being that you can't fly in a plane. With the economic crisis and the fragility of the commercial airline industry, it is never going to happen that a state, a resident of a state, will not be able to get on a commercial airline. That will break that industry.
I'm going to ask you to wrap so go to
I'm
Sisteric.
Actually concluding. Senator Metzger,
in conclusion,
we need to join the momentum. We need to join and have our voice added to this extremely expensive unfunded mandate that exposes Oregonians to identity theft. I do hope you will consider moving 536 forward to stop further advancement. And to the degree that 128 has real ID implementation not to do that, I'm happy to talk about the fictitious drivers and authorizing DMV to be doing something in law that they've apparently been doing for years. But I hope that we will do more and we will join the effort across this country, and I appreciate your time and your support on this.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Mr. Starr, welcome.
Thank you, members of the committee, Chairman Metzger. For the record, Kevin Starr of the Oregon Firearms Federation, and I'll be very brief. It is truly a nonpartisan issue when Oregon Firearms and ACLU are sitting at the table agreeing.
I thought I might want to get an autographed picture.
Well, Representative Richardson right here, too.
I think what we're looking at, and obviously Ms. Meyer covered almost everything I would have said, there are two real issues here, I think. One is a technical issue. Can this information truly be safeguarded? I don't believe it can. As she pointed out, there are these breaches regularly. As a matter of fact, I believe they've already started having breaches of the RFID chips in current passports. So the potential for truly protecting this vast amount of data, I just don't think it's possible no matter how hard you try to do it. But our biggest concern with it is more philosophical, and I think some of you might share that. It's just a question of, is it right for the federal government to create these mandates? And I would even say that the costs that are involved are a secondary issue. They're a very important issue, especially now, considering the economic conditions. But even if the federal government fully funded every mandate they placed on you, first of all, we have to remember that's still your money. It's still our money that they're spending. But that isn't really the point to us. The point to us is that there has to come some point in time where the federal government can no longer demand a copy of everything all the time and turn us into a society where the expression, "your papers, please," becomes very commonplace. And I applaud the efforts to kind of to rein in the feds on this. And I would, you know, go a step further and say, we don't care how much money you throw at us, the privacy of our citizens is more important than demands that were made by the federal government in response to issues that this doesn't really cover. In response to terrorism and immigration issues, the fact is that these kind of rules have a powerful impact on law-abiding Americans in terms of their privacy, their ability to travel freely. That is not, in my estimation, the correct way to respond to criminal acts from people from other countries. And other than that, I think Ms. Meyer covered everything I would have said. I won't take up any more of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Starrett. Questions for Mr. Starrett or Ms. Meyer? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, all.
And what? Yes?
Thank you all.
Committee, we'll talk about what we may do with these pieces of legislation, but as I said on the outset, I haven't sensed within the body a tremendous desire to move into this portion yet, since we were so rejected it so thoroughly. And the one issue in which, while it was very contentious, of citizenship, and stuff, we've done that part. That was the part that it was contentious, but there was still a majority. But this one seems the majority is very strongly against the database, the federal privacy issues. And I appreciate the department, their role. I mean, they need to do what they need to do. But I think, as Mr. Starrett pointed out, their job is implementing as they see the requirements that are put upon them. Our job is to set the policy, and I just think that from a policy standpoint that Oregon should continue to join the growing number of states to say, you know, the federal government doesn't have that right to do that, or at least as 536 does, put some sidebars before we start that conversation again. No one knows the future, but I certainly concur with Ms. Meyer that I think under this administration it is very likely that things will change or the dates keep being pushed back. And in our financial situation, I don't know why we would want to ask more of our citizens to implement something that, of databases that were. One thing I will ask Ms. Meyer and Mr. McClellan is to engage in a discussion and coordinating with Mr. Stembridge regarding the issue of our own employees. You brought that up, Ms. Meyer, and some thoughts that you had on it. It would be good to get some clarity as to what DMV currently does, what they want to do, what your points are, so that we can perhaps bring that before the committee for the same reason that we want everybody to be secure, and we're providing more and more information now for driver's license as a result of 1080, and we do want to make sure that our employees are protecting that information and see if we really need to do additional steps, modify it, maybe not as exactly as in 128, maybe it is, but your expertise on that would be helpful. And if you could provide also, Mr. McClellan, just the information about the fictitious, I understand what that is, undercover cops, but I think having those questions would be interesting because one thing we are creating, or we did create with 1080, is a right to rely on the driver's license if this person is who they are, and I think just to have an idea of how the scope of that, I think, would make a lot of members be at ease. Any thoughts from the committee or comments?
No, I think you're right on point. I think you have a good sense of the feeling of the legislative body. Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of concerns. I think we need to really discuss whether we want to even bring the legislation forward.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator.
I think it has numerous problems, and I would agree with that statement.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for being here, and we are adjourned.
Okay.